Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now.
The rain,
now the rain has come.
I can see all
obstacles in my way.
Gone are the dark clouds
that had me.
It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be a bright, sunshiny day.
I think I can make it now. The pain is gone.
All of the bad feelings
have disappeared.
Here is that rainbow I've been praying for.
It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Look all around, there's nothing but blue sky.
Look straight ahead,
nothing but blue sky. Shining day, gonna be a bright, sunshining day.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to my last Straight Wives Talk show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Well, I always said on my last show, I'm going to go solo, and I'm going to sing that song because you know how they say it's not over till the fat lady sings. I am that fat lady, and not embarrassed or ashamed of it. I once had a nun tell me a few years ago that dog breeds come in all different sizes. There are Great Danes, and there are Dachshunds, and there are little Chihuahuas and St. Bernards, and she said that's how people are too, and you just have to love people for who they are. So I stopped struggling long ago and accepted myself for who I am. Not that I don't always try, but this is who I am. So I am able to say it's finally going to be over. I want to first of all thank so many of my listeners who have been so loyal and kind and complimentary through all these years. This is the end of 8 years of doing this, 8 years of show. There's hundreds of them that are podcasts that are now available that you can go back and listen to. And I appreciate your support. And once again, your comments and your feedback have really been inspiring to me through this time. I also would like to give thanks to some of my wonderful hosts and guests that have been here, starting with Dr. Brian Hooper, who co-hosted my show for several years, Suzette Vernon, who co-hosted the show for several years, also Dr. Ira, who's a regular guest of mine, my good friend Deborah Sutton, who has been very generous with her time, also some of my other guests that come regularly, Dr. Margalis Felstad, who's the most incredible woman who I had. One of my bucket list wishes came true. I actually got to meet Dr. Felstad and actually hug that woman who helps caretakers start thinking about themselves and not about the narcissist that they go with. Also, Alexa Servadidio, she's always been willing to come on the show and talk about healing. Marion Glynn, who talks about post-traumatic stress. Donna Anderson from Love Fraud, who's been very generous with her time. And also Maggie Barnes, who's a wonderful therapist, who has given her insight and comes on the show, has come on the show a number of times. All of my guests have been very generous in trying to help our women who are out there. And that's why I love about Blog Talk Radio. You know, you'll always have shows that you can go back and refer to. I'd like to also give a special shout out on my last show to a woman who I just love from California. And her name is Heather. She's the one who inspired me and when I first met her a few years ago to use that song, I Can See Clearly Now. The rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. And that happens to be very true. I mean, this is what this whole time of mine for the last 35 years has been about, helping people to see the light, helping people to feel better about their lives. You know, it was so amazing how many letters I got after my last newsletter from women who are part of my support network thanking me for actually saving their lives, which I think is an overstatement for sure. But at least I feel that in some way I helped save their sanity by giving them the truth that I've come to believe. And even though everybody may not agree with me, that's perfectly fine. In life, you have to find your own truth and you have to find your own way. One of the things I think I've learned, if I had to learn, and I'm going to talk tonight about a lot of the lessons I learned since this is my last show. One of the things that most impressed me, and I use this as my guiding light, is something that Janine Finelli, who was a guest on our show a number of times, has taught me, because she has this tattooed right into her hands. She has three words, and it is love on one hand, is kind on the other. And I think that pretty much sums up everything. If you find in your life that love is not being kind to you, then you owe it to yourself to find the love that will be kind to you. And even if that love is self-love, that's perfectly fine. You know, a lot of times women say to me, well, I'm not looking to start a new life. I don't want to meet somebody new. I've had it with relationships, and maybe that is true at the moment when you're saying it. And it may be true forever, and guess what? It's better to be by yourself and be happy than to have to be with the wrong person who's making you miserable. I know that people have misinterpreted some of the things that I've said, but I don't really care because I stand by them. One of the things that I say on my website is that you cannot fix a broken man, but he can break you. That doesn't necessarily apply to all gay people. That has nothing to do with it. It means that when you're living in a broken relationship and when you're living with a gay husband that is broken, you can't fix it. No matter how much you try, no matter how many times you run around in circles trying to make something work that doesn't work, it's not going to work. You're not going to fix your gay husband. He's not going to become straight. It's not that he's broken. It's just that he's gay. The marriage is broken. But what will happen is because he shouldn't be in this marriage, he's going to run you ragged until he breaks you. And I've seen that happen to so many of our women through our support network, not only through my newsletters, but also through our healing weekends, through my online support group. I've seen this happen repeatedly, that women get beaten down by their husbands and they become totally different people than they are. And I know that happened to me. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my story. And then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my writings and what I've learned from my story. So I was married back in 1978 to my ex-husband, who has passed away in the last year and a half. And I was young. Well, I wasn't that young. I was 27 years old, and it wasn't my first marriage. But at 27 years old, I still believe that there's a lot that you need to learn. And there was an attraction at first sight. We were caught up with the sign of the times. So I was an activist back then, and I met him during my days of activism. He was a strong, muscular karate teacher, martial artist, and he kind of looked like Sylvester Stallone at that time. And I had just seen the movie Fist with Sylvester Stallone, and I was extremely impressed. I was like in love with Sylvester Stallone from that movie, if you ever have a chance to see Fist, about the unions. And then I met my ex-husband, and he was very charming. very personable, very strong, and I was a strong woman. So I needed somebody strong to lean on, and he happened to be there for me. We only knew each other for a matter of months before we were married. It was a very fast, whirlwind kind of relationship. But I went for it, and I have no regrets when I look back. It was a mistake. You know, I really didn't know him that well. But even if I had known him well, I was one of those women who always felt, well, if the guy is broken, you can fix him. And in the sense that he came from a bad family or a dysfunctional family, and I thought that could be fixed if he had enough love. Gay was not even the issue then. I didn't understand why a gay person would want to marry a straight person. That was beyond my comprehension back in 1978. I had been in California in the late 60s when life was very different back then. Everything was very fluid. There was lots of sex going on, very promiscuous kind of society out in California, Southern California where I was, and I'm sure in Northern as well. But people were doing all kinds of things under the name of experimentation. And so if someone would have said to me that they've tried being gay, but they had a relationship with a man, they tried it but they didn't like it, I would have probably thought that was very normal, to be honest with you, because that's what I was seeing back in the 60s and early 70s. Back in those days, if you remember, if you're as old as I am, there was a slogan called Free Love, and that's what it was about. People were doing everything, everywhere, with lots of people, some people, a few people. You know, there was no holds barred back in those days. So, like I say, I would never have suspected something was wrong. In fact, prior to meeting my gay husband, I had hooked up with a high school sweetheart of mine, and I hadn't seen him in 8 years, and both our lives went in different directions. And we went together in high school, and there was always something not quite right then. But we did have good feelings for each other and attraction to each other, even though our lives went in different paths. So I met up with him again, and at that time, when I first met up with him, I was 25 years old and living in New York, and we got together. And I said to him, what have you been doing since we last saw each other? And he said, well, I've been in 4 relationships. And I said, okay, tell me about them. He said, well, 2 of them were with men and 2 were with women. Now, I did think that was a little odd that he said 2 of them were with men. And I said to him, well, that sounds a little strange. You had 2 relationships with men? And he said, well, to be honest, I just wasn't sure about myself. He said, so I tried it, and then I realized after having them that that wasn't who I am and that that's not what my preference is. I don't have a thing for men. It was just kind of caught up in the college days when people were, you know, trying different things. And you know what? It made sense to me. And I went with him for a matter of months, you know, maybe 8-9 months, and I was planning a life with him, but there was still something off about it. So I met my future husband, my gay husband, Robert, and like I say, we hooked up right away. And it was a marriage that wasn't meant to be. We were both going through a lot in our own lives. And, of course, he was gay, so it really wasn't meant to be. I had no idea he was gay before I married him. Someone had come up to me and suggested he might be gay, and I said, why would you even think like that? And the young man told me, well, he told me he had past experiences. And when I confronted him, right away he was so angry, and he threw over the table. We were sitting at a restaurant, and he said, how dare somebody accuse me of being gay? And I just felt so happy because I was getting married in 2 weeks. And I thought, thank goodness, this was just a bad misunderstanding. And I didn't think anything more of it. Certainly, we had sex before we got married, and I didn't think there'd be any way that a gay man could have sex with a woman. I just didn't think that was possible. And so there was nothing to make me think otherwise. And I would say to him, did you do anything maybe in your past that you don't want to talk about? And he would say, well, I had things that happened to me, but nothing that, you know, I have to talk about. So I really was not suspicious. Here was this big, strapping martial artist, strong and handsome and virile, and I really believed there's no way somebody gay would marry me. As the marriage started deteriorating very quickly, you know, I started suspecting maybe there is a problem. And that namely came because once we got married, sex was very, very, not very often. And we were a young married couple. And at that point, I was pretty attractive. And, you know, he said I appealed to him. And all of a sudden, he didn't want to have sex anymore, more than maybe once. It started out with once or twice a week, and then it went to once a week. And when it was once a week after only 2 months of marriage, and we were only in our 20s, I said, don't you think that we should have sex a little more? And right away, he would start accusing me of being a nymphomaniac. What is it? You're only thinking about sex? And he came up with lots of good excuses, like he was tired, working hard, his back hurt, his head hurt. You know, I could go through the whole list. All of the women who listen to this are very familiar with this list of excuses. But the bottom line is, gay still didn't enter my mind. It wasn't until a couple of years later, after several incidents happened, that all of a sudden I started thinking about the word bisexual. Thought maybe there's a chance. And I gave him an opening because something happened. And it involved him and a young man. And I said to him, now's the time you got to tell me, is there any chance you might be bisexual? And he didn't answer me. And I said to him, you know what? I was bargaining at that point. I said, if you have to be bisexual, I can learn to live with it as long as it's only once every 6 months and you go somewhere that I never have to hear about it or know about it, and it's with a consenting adult, I guess I could live with that. And that's what I gave him permission to do, what he had to do. And, of course, I gave an inch. He took a foot. You can't give people that kind of permission because that's not how life works. You can't hope that this is going to go away. You can't hope that if you love a man enough that he's going to change, because a gay man is gay. He may change his behaviors temporarily, but his need to be with a man is always going to be there. He may not act on it, but as I said in some of my articles before, it's like a dry alcoholic. You can take an alcoholic and put him into recovery, but he could be miserable every day of his life because that's what you call a dry alcoholic, someone who's doing what he has to do, but he's not going to be happy about it. So his behaviors are going to be like an alcoholic's, even if he's not drinking. And that's how it is with a gay husband. They can abstain. They can stay away for a while, but they're not going to be happy. And you, as the wife, are going to pay the penalty and suffer. And then you have to always live with this on top of your head. When is it going to change? Because it always does. Trust me when I tell you that. I've worked with thousands of men over the last 35 years. That's how long I've been doing this, since 1982. And I've met some wonderful gay men who were husbands who mistakenly got married and were willing to live up to their mistake, be emotionally and financially supported to their wives. But I've met the majority of them who were just coming to me because they wanted help to get out of their marriage. But I would say in almost every single case, except for maybe one or two, these men were actively acting out on their homosexual needs and had established boyfriends in many of these cases and were looking to get out of their marriage in the easiest way possible. So when women think that their husbands aren't out there doing anything, they're only kidding themselves, not me, themselves. So I wanted to go tonight back to some of my best writings that I felt were my best eye-opening writings and read them to you, because to sum them up would maybe miss some of the good points. So I'm going back now to one of my earliest newsletters. It was actually probably my second newsletter that I ever wrote. And I'll tell you how long ago it was. April 2001. So this was 18 years ago. But this was profound and revealing words from a gay ex-husband. And this is from a man named Jay, who I'm still friends with on Facebook. And Jay really opened my eyes to something. And this is, like I say, only my second newsletter, but, you know, 18 more years worth to come. It says, I receive several letters each week from men who are struggling to come out to their wives. I respond quickly to these men in hopes that my support and encouragement will give them the courage to be honest with their spouses. I also receive several letters each month from gay men who find my website or see my book, who commend me for the work I am doing in helping people understand the complexities of straight gay marriages. 2 months ago, I received a letter from a man who was about to become an important part of my life. Jay is an attorney in Pennsylvania. He's the first man I have ever met who can write words in a manner that clarified all of my own thoughts and feelings, allowing me to conceptualize the key to the problem of straight gay marriages that I will share with you. Jay's sensitivity and honesty reflects what most of us would like our husbands or ex-husbands to tell us. Too few of us ever get to hear these words. I asked Jay if I could reprint some of his thoughts because I believe it validates so much of what all of us feel and need to hear. After reading his words, I'm sure you will appreciate not only what he says, but the beauty of how he says it. Jay's first communication to me in early February stated, "I am a gay man who was married for 23 years. My ex-wife and I have 2 children. I am writing to encourage you to continue the important work you are doing. I only wish that in 1996, when I finally began to come out, that there had been resources such as yours to support our family through our transition." I thanked him for his kind words, and the response was this: "I think both men and women in these circumstances must recognize that there are no winners, but there are survivors who create new ways to relate, maintain, support, and redefine their family. In the process of ending my marriage, I lost my best friend and the dream we had of growing old together. Slowly, we have worked to continue to parent our children in accordance with the many values that we continue to share. There are many things I would, in retrospect, have done and handled differently, but my single largest regret is that I did not deal with the secret of my sexuality while still in my marriage and in the years of counseling before divorce. So to those men who you counsel, I would urge them to give the woman they choose to love and bear children with the earliest chance to deal with the truth. They probably will not have a marriage together, but at least they will have a chance of preserving the love that once brought them together with hopes and plans for a lifetime." So then I wrote, more words of insight kept coming as the weeks progressed. I will highlight just a few of these pearls that will lead to my conclusion. Jay then wrote, "I keep reminding myself of the shame that fueled my own denial and kept me closeted for most of my life. However, I also know the damage that secrets do to those who keep them and would like to teach the lesson to my kids as well. My kids have always been a priority. I can recall vividly my own frustration at seeking advice on how to come out to my kids and finding little support from the gay or straight communities. Of course, I was looking for the right way to do it and assure the kids would not go off the deep end or reject me. No one could have given me the surefire approach. However, I think there is a real void. God knows there are self-help books out there on everything else. No woman deserves to be in this situation. In the past, I spent a lot of time searching my own soul, trying to figure out how much of the failure of my marriage was attributable to homosexuality and how much was the struggle for control, neediness, and other dynamics extant in any couple relationship. My ex-wife and I hurt each other a lot. There are still things about her that I dislike. But I have concluded that the presence of my secret in that relationship that relationship was the primary poison. Much of the rest of our conflicts flowed from it. The absence of trust, the neediness, possessiveness, the anger, and ultimately the conflict that both created, even if it was not premeditated design, and used to find the impetus, despair, and courage to leave. Accordingly, as painful as it is to admit, I know that the secret of my homosexuality is inextricably bound up in what was wrong in our relationship. Yes, I have difficult issues to confront. As with any person facing difficult times, some of them I handle quite poorly. I could empathize with your own horror and dismay at how you thought and acted at various points. I share your belief that bisexuality is often a transitional label and crutch used by homosexuals unable or unwilling to come to terms with their natural orientation. I lived that myself. After my separation from my wife, I woke up one morning after a date with a woman and was appalled by the self-discovery that I might do this to another woman because I hated who and how I was. Then I said, his most profound words are yet to come. I was much more demanding about the order around me when I was married to my ex-wife. while I still feel like, while I still like a nice home, I find I am less compulsive about cleaning and demanding than those around me keeping things tidy and neat. I believe that my need for external order in my prior life was a way of coping with my own internal chaos and tension created by my attempts to compartmentalize my being. Of course, my comfort with disorder at home also served to legitimize my disappointment in my ex-wife as a homemaker. If only she were a better wife, we would be happy, was my mantra. Indeed, she was disorganized and sloppy, but as it turned out, I have realized that if only she had been a man, I would have been more tolerant. Ouch. Those were all of Jay's words, and they came to me and gave me a great realization. For those of us who have had gay husbands who complained actively or passively about our inadequacies and faults as a wife, I have another thought. Who would we be today if we had a straight husband? How would our destiny have changed if we were loved, nurtured, sexually desired with passion and tenderness, given emotional support and encouragement, and made to feel like we were part of a real couple in tune with each other's needs, wants, and aspirations? What if we didn't have to spend countless hours each day wondering why we were failures as wives, women, and lovers, ripping away our self-esteem layer by layer until we became strangers unto ourselves and others? What if our husband's dishonesty and cheating didn't change us to become untrusting, suspicious, and doubting wives, forcing us to question our ability to make rational decisions? How many of us were sidetracked through those detours of deceit that diverted us from the direction that life might have taken us otherwise? Bottom line, no matter how much a gay man loves a straight woman, it is not the kind of love that fulfills the basic human need that all of us have. It can never be the kind of love that inspires the music that becomes classics or the poetry that makes the heart flutter. It is not the kind of love that can ever be returned to the degree that you are giving it. Even the best of relationships are barely more than great friendships. Not the passion and excitement that makes us thrive and look forward to waking up each day. And even though these relationships are woven with dishonesty, distrust, infidelity, resentment, and frustration, life was never meant to be this catered. What Jay has done for me personally is say what I'm waiting for my ex-husband to say after 20 years. Occasionally, a word of wisdom will float out from my ex-husband expressing how screwed up he was through the years. Does it change anything? Not really, but yes, knowing the truth does help validate who we are, what we have become because of our gay husbands, and how we can change and now move forward. It is the first step towards healing the scars, bridging the understanding, and bringing closure to this chapter in our life. So that was what I wrote back 18 years ago, and you know what? I think, to be honest with you, that sums it up beautifully. Who would we be today if we had a straight husband? And how would that have changed our destiny? All right, so that was back then. Here's some other great stuff from 2001. This one's called Games People Play, the If Only and Blame Games. I've worked with too many women who would first assume that the reason for their husband's homosexuality is due to something they did wrong. For those of us who have had the time to work through this problem over a longer period, it's easy for us to react by saying that this thinking is ludicrous. But try to remember when you first suspected or discovered your husband's interest in men. Then it doesn't seem quite as ridiculous. When I reflect on my own inner feelings of shame during those early days, I remember feeling a great sense of responsibility. I used to play a game that most of us fall prey to, and I call it the if-only game. It goes like this: if only I could be a better wife, if only I was more attractive, if only I was better as a lover, if only I was better as a housekeeper, if only I wasn't so demanding, if only I could lose more weight, if only I was smarter, if only, then maybe he could love me enough not to think of men. My ex-husband was excellent at playing the other mind twister game, which I called the blame game. After I questioned him for the first time about his sexuality in 2 years into our marriage, he used this as an opening to play this game as his new weapon of mental torture. This is where he would come closest to revealing the truth by throwing it in my face. If I were gay, who could blame me? After all, you are always making too many sexual demands, complaining about something, gaining weight, acting jealous, being possessive, much too demanding, all-consuming, and the list went on. Then he would end the conversation with the words that I desperately wanted and needed to hear. It's a wonder that I'm not gay. What a relief. I was a failure as a wife, but at least he was not a failure enough to make him gay. A young woman who visits my online support sessions on Thursday evenings recently told me that on an intellectual level, she knows she didn't make her husband gay, but emotionally, she still feels that she is responsible. I often hear this in the beginning of a marriage separation. During the early stages of disclosure, it is easy to believe that we are somehow at fault for a husband's decision to enter the gay world. Even when we can accept the news, we still can't grasp the implications. We can't figure out how our husbands were straight enough to marry us, make love to us, even if it wasn't frequently or passionately, have children with us, have married lives with us, but chuck it all for sex with a man. When we pass through the denial stage and accept that our husbands are gay, we still have a difficult time believing it wasn't something that we did that drove them over the borderline and into the twilight zone of homosexuality. What takes time for us to fully comprehend is that we had no part whatsoever in our husband's homosexuality. This was who we were long before we ever knew them. Some of them knew it and fought it and hoped that marriage to a woman would miraculously make them straight. It can't, and it didn't. Others claim that they honestly didn't know it because it didn't surface until years later. But even the late bloomers almost felt that something was not quite right. They just didn't think it was a sexual thing. Playing the if-only game is a very natural part of self-questioning that all of us initially go through. The problem is that some of us keep playing, sometimes for months and even years. This is a dangerous game if played for too long because it indicates that you have not been able to put things in perspective. It also stops you from moving ahead and trying to rebuild your life. Prolonged questioning of your failures in the marriage serve no purpose at all. If you failed at the marriage, it's because you were in a no-win situation. You were set up for failure, not for success. Success was not an option. If you had been in a marriage with an emotionally healthy, straight man, all of your efforts of being a supportive and loving wife would have been appreciated and, in fact, cherished. So don't use your marriage with a gay husband as a map for your future relationships. If you try again with a straight man, you'll see how different and better it can be. And you know what? I'm looking back on this 18 years ago, and I just have to read that one line again. Prolonged questioning of your failures in a marriage serve no purpose at all. If you failed at the marriage, it's because you were in a no-win situation. You were set up for failure, not for success. And I think that was very important to remember also. Next, I had an article called Living in Libido Limbo. It says, let's discuss married gay men who won't leave the marriage, or for that matter, won't leave the closet. This is a subject that can be talked about enough because it seems to be a stumbling block for so many of us who can't get our husbands to come clean with the truth about their homosexuality. I receive so many letters each month from women who are sure their husbands are gay but fear confronting them. But then I also get letters from women who do confront their husbands with evidence in hand and get denials with distorted truth, giving excuses such as, those pictures belong to a coworker. I have no clue how those websites got on our computer. For those women whose husbands eventually tell you the truth, count yourself as lucky even though you may not feel that way at the time. No doubt hearing the word gay is devastating, but not hearing it is even worse. This month alone, I've received 32 letters from women who ask me for advice because their husbands or ex-husbands will not admit to their homosexuality. These women know the truth. They've stumbled on it one way or another. It has smacked them in the face through hidden websites, email, pornography, letters, hotel receipts, phone bills, etc. And yet, their husbands just keep lying or denying. They are not ready to be honest and may never be ready. Some men will never be ready to accept their homosexuality because it is too painful or embarrassing. These are the men I call the limbo men. Their whole lives are lived in limbo. They are emotionally straight but physically gay. They never feel totally comfortable in either world, but they are much more comfortable passing in the straight world, where they are accepted as part of mainstream society. All married gay men go through limbo for a period of time. In other words, they are stuck in between both worlds, hoping that by wanting the straight world badly enough, they'll be able to cross over into it. They keep thinking that if they play the role long enough, they'll become transformed into the part, not just play the part of an actor. But the limbo men I place in this category are different from other gay men who eventually come to terms with themselves. They are even different than the gay men who are staying in their marriages but who acknowledge they are gay, at least on some level. The real limbo men have no sense of remorse for what they're doing to their wives. In fact, they often feel as if they are the victims and strike back at their wives in an emotional or physically abusive manner. They blame their wives for their unhappiness and never have a clue about the damage they are doing to these women, whom they promise to love, cherish, and respect. They place the blame of their unhappiness on their wives when, in fact, there's nothing that their wives could possibly do to make them feel happy or fulfilled. Their wives are women, and they are gay men. These are the men who will never leave their marriages. They will stay there until the day they die, leading a painful existence of sharing that pain with their wives. More specifically, pouring that pain upon their wives. We all know that misery loves company, and these men are happy to make you as miserable as they are. So often these limbo men husbands luck out. They have wives who are much kinder and more understanding than average. These are the women who will keep trying every little trick in the book, thinking someday they will get their husbands hooked. The women live an accepted existence looking for crumbs in the marriage while trying to turn those crumbs into a cake. It's truly a tragedy and a waste of human life. I got to be honest, I really like that, and I believe very strongly what I wrote was correct. Okay, let me find some other good ones before I have to go. This one I think is important, denial, because so many times women tell me their husbands are in denial. It says, I'd like, and this is from 2003, I'd like to end this month's newsletter with a few thoughts about the subject of denial. I've been doing some rethinking about my use of this word. I realize that I've been making excuses from some of your gay husbands by suggesting that they are in denial. When husbands eventually admit to having gay sex but say they didn't think this was gay, they say it is over because they say it because they were in denial. In fact, I honestly believe that their gay peers also buy into this thinking. But now I think it only serves as another excuse for dishonesty. It kind of sounds good to the unsuspecting mind. I'm sorry, honey. I would have told you years ago, but I didn't know. I didn't understand. I was in a state of denial. And when a gay husband uses this as an excuse, it actually makes a horrible situation seem just a little better. It takes away some of that stabbing sting from our psyche. It generates a sort of win-win situation all the way around. How? Well, let's face it. If your husband says that he was in denial, that means he wasn't consciously or purposely betraying you. In fact, he wasn't technically cheating on you. He swears he never really enjoyed it. In some cases, he can barely even remember it. He has absolutely no emotional attachments to the stranger that he spent a few quick moments with. His, quote, thinking head, quote, was in such a different place than his sexual head that he never even realized that it happened during those weeks, months, or in some cases, years. How can you possibly hold this against him? He was almost like, for well, lack of a better word, a victim. Shoo, don't you feel better? I would. And there are even some extra bonus points here. You have more peace of mind than before because your gay husband really loves you. And those momentary encounters, which are only a few seconds in a vast sea of time, were simply that, momentary blackouts, where your husband can't remember what happened. He can't even remember how it started or ended. It's just a blank spot in his subconscious or unconscious, so to speak. He has no recollection of what an actual person was, but the actual person whom it happened with, and don't even think about a name. There was no name. The face is a blur for sure. And after it happened, it was tucked away, or shall I say, thrown away from his mind, never to return. When the gay husbands refer to denial, I realize that it means they are acting on their own needs to sexually fulfill their homosexuality. Denial really means they don't dare tell you, their wives, lest you should understand what the real problem is in your marriage. The only one I think they are really in denial to is you. When you ask your husband what the real problem is in the marriage, he will deny there is a real problem. When he stops making love to you and you ask him why, he'll once again deny there's a problem. In fact, anything you ask him that even alludes to homosexuality, bam. There must be something wrong with you because your husband denies he has a problem. It's really difficult for me to swallow this line about denial at this stage of time. I have done things that I'm not proud of in my life, but I never pretended to myself that I hadn't done them. I try to live up to my responsibilities and don't look to peddle them off elsewhere. As horrifying as acting on gay sexual urges may have seemed at any particular moment during a marriage, once the deed is done, it's done. Using denial as a tactic to keep running away from the truth seems pretty lame. I'm not saying you have to shout it from the rooftop, but I do think you need to tell the person whom you're married to and promise, sorry for that noise, I'm talking about denial now, I'm straight here. I do think you have to tell the person who you're married to the problem and live up to the responsibilities. I'm not saying you have to shout it from the rooftops, but at least be honest with your spouse, for better or worse. Yes, this is worse, but let's be fair. Your wife hasn't done anything wrong except try to love you. Why can't you love her enough to be truthful? Because you're in denial? No, I don't think so. Let's call it what it is, namely conscience failure. Well, I really like that article too. I have to be honest with you. Some of my earlier writings, I really believe they were the most effective writings that there were because they told the truth as it is and how it remains today. Now, this one's called Distorted Perceptions. I think this is really important too. It says, I've written about this before and probably not too long ago, but I could never write about this enough, so I'll write about it again. It's what I call distorted perception. It's an important part of understanding the whole concept of your marriage and why it failed. I think I've gotten most of you on board with understanding that you had no influence on your husband's homosexuality. No matter how easy it is for us to fall into the trap of believing that we were not, quote, good enough or, quote, smart enough or, quote, pretty enough, or, quote, sexy enough for our husbands, I hope after reading my constant reassurances, you finally understand that your husband's homosexuality was there long before you were. The concept of why your marriage failed is a little more difficult for you to understand. You are looking at your marriage as if it takes two to tango, as the saying goes. I often hear women say, he made mistakes, and I made mistakes. Excuse me one second. I'm really sorry for that delay, but my computer just went to another part for a moment. One second. Okay. He made mistakes and I made mistakes, or we both had faults. Let me acknowledge that no one is perfect. Yes, we all have faults, but it's not your faults that created the problems in your marriage. On the other hand, it's very possible that the problems in the marriage intensified your faults. Example, okay, let's start with revealing that some of the problems I had in my marriage. Because of all the erratic behavior and inconsistencies in my marriage, I was overly suspicious of my husband's actions. Whenever I couldn't account for his missing time, I believed he was out cheating on me. I made an automatic search of all his belongings when he wasn't looking. This included all of the pockets in his clothes, his little black phone book, and his wallet. I looked in the car at the mileage gauge, looked under the seats for clues of unfamiliar items, and went through the glove compartment for any suspicious papers, matchbook covers, or receipts left behind and haphazardly thrown in there. As soon as I would find possible incriminating piece of evidence, I would confront my husband. He would get angry and yell at me how neurotic I was and how ridiculous. He always had an explanation of whatever evidence I found, and he did his best to convince me that I was the one with a vivid imagination that was always in overactive mode. From where he was sitting, I looked like the overly nagging wife. Snooping did not become me, but I became obsessed. Once the trust was gone, there was no way for me to regain it, especially when his patterns of suspicion continued. As much as I tried to ignore what was hitting me in the face, I was unable to do so. As time progressed, my obsession deepened. Every time he left the house, my imagination took over, and images of young men jolted in my mind. Every guy my husband spoke to became suspect to me. My reactions to people were totally different because of this. No doubt there were many innocent people who became victims of my unfounded hostility, but I was unable to distinguish fact from fiction because of the ones who were my realities and nightmares. Now my husband blamed me for overreacting to almost everything, and maybe in many cases I did. Bottom line, this was not who I was, but who I became, because he was gay and living a lie. And that lie infiltrated the darkest part of my soul, turning me into someone whom I didn't recognize or even like. There were days when I woke up and didn't want to live anymore. This was not me. The real me had a passion for life that had been temporarily snuffed out. I didn't know it was temporary while I lived it because my life was now on another plane, somewhere between the twilight zone and death. I say death because on three different occasions I attempted suicide. It seemed like an excellent alternative during those months that seemed so inescapable and hopeless. But that wasn't me either. Prior to my marriage, I was so high on life. I was active, sociable, surrounded by high self-esteem, and very independent. I turned into someone who was depressed, scared, insecure, independent, codependent, and crying constantly from being hurt. The decisions and moves that I made during my marriage were based on the mutated ex-perceptions inside my marriage. Before I suspected that homosexuality was the cause of my unhappiness, I came to believe it was me who was causing the problems in my marriage. If I told my husband that our marriage had problems, he would reply, "We don't have problems. You have the problem. I am happy in the marriage. You are the unhappy one." Many of you have written to me that your husbands tell you the same thing. The problem is you, not him, not the marriage. And naturally, my husband, as well as yours, never looks beyond the fact that you have a problem, because it's always all about them. I guess I was falling into the darker hole each day, so it was easy for me to believe that I was the one with the problems. He wasn't falling into a dark hole. He seemed content, and why not? He had a wife and a life outside his wife. He was living his lie, and it was a very big lie. Not a little white lie. Lying about your sexuality is a really big, very big lie. Very big. What is a little lie? A little lie is taking money and buying something and not telling your spouse. A little lie is getting a couple of drinks at the bar with some friends while you tell your wife you're working. A little lie is not revealing that you broke your diet, smoked a cigarette after you quit, or paying more for something than you're supposed to, but keeping quiet not to start a fight because you've unbalanced the family budget. It's not like I'm condoning lying, but I certainly do understand it. I've lied myself when the thought of revealing something is going to be an unnecessary argument that can be avoided and has no real effect on the state of a relationship. To lie is human. To live a lie is different. It's not something that's inconsequential. When you live a lie, there are always consequences for someone. In our cases, it ends up being our consequence. The basis for a relationship should not be built on give and take. When a man stops having sex with his wife because it's too much of a burden for him because he's gay, you are giving wrong information to your wife. I don't hear too many men take responsibility for their lack of sexual activity, other than made-up stories about being too tired, too overworked, too depressed, too headachy, too sore from exercising. When those excuses run out, then the tables turned. Then it's you. You are too heavy. You are too naggy. You are too unsympathetic. You are too demanding. And, of course, you are a nymphomaniac or something just as insulting. Because you now think you're the problem of your marriage, you are the one who tries to change yourself. So now you're changing yourself to become the ideal wife of a man who doesn't want to make love to you, no matter how good you look, no matter how nice you act, no matter how talented you are, and, of course, how devoted you are to your gay husband. Ouch, that hurts. Eventually, after your husband rejects you enough times, you stop expecting sex. And you'll also stop asking for it. He breathes a deep sigh of relief. Shoo, she finally gets it. Stop asking because you're not going to get it. Once your wife stops asking you to have sex, she has resigned herself to living an unhappy life with you. How happy do you think she's going to be? And when she's not happy, that's her fault too, right? Wrong. It's the husband's fault. Some gay husbands believe that money is the key to happiness, your happiness. They will try to compensate for their sexual inadequacy by buying you gifts and trinkets as if that will do it for you. It's the same pattern as a physically abusive husband who beats his wife, begs for forgiveness, tells her that he loves her, and goes out to buy a present to prove it. Hypocrites, just like a bracelet's going to make you feel better about yourself. I don't think you're good enough to make love to, but I think you're good enough for a bracelet. Thanks, pal, but no thanks. I know they say that the failure of a marriage is the fault of both parties, and maybe that's the case in functional marriages, but guess what? It's not that way when you live with a gay man. You aren't happy. He can't be happy. He's saying that you are making him unhappy because of your own unhappiness. But if he could have been a straight husband, maybe you would be happy. Perhaps you could have met your life challenges as a team instead of being on different teams. And not only are you both on different teams, but you're both playing in a different ballpark. If the pitcher for the New York Yankees throws the most perfect pitch in New York, the best player in Boston standing hundreds of miles away can't hit it no matter what. You are in two different cities on two different teams, two different places in two different spaces. The same goes for straight wives and gay husbands. If your husband is telling you that the lack of sex in the marriage is your fault and he is a gay man, no matter what you do to make yourself more physically attractive, and some of you have done everything, including breast implants, liposuction, and more, it's not going to change anything. You're playing in the wrong ballpark. Or, shall I say, you have the wrong plumbing. If you think I'm saying to all of you are perfect and without fault, well, I'm not. No one is perfect. We're all human. We all make mistakes. We all have bad days. We all have human traits, and this is fine. And no husband, straight, gay, or otherwise is perfect either. I don't think any of us are seeking perfection. We're seeking husbands who are playing in the same ballpark. And although many couples who are straight couples grow apart, they do it in a more honest way. They don't always look to place the blame in your lap. They take some responsibility for the marriage unraveling. And you can make sense of those marriages that don't work without feeling that you're responsible for their failure. In a marriage with a gay husband, you don't even know what is real and what is not real. You're living in a labyrinth that has only twists and turns. There is no way to find the end of the maze. The twists and turns go nowhere except in vicious circles. And so when you sit back and recount the years that have passed and try to figure out what went wrong in your marriage, do yourself a favor. Stop thinking about it. When you live with a gay man who is parading in disguise as a straight man, nothing changes the circumstances. Or shall I say, only you are capable of changing them by leaving the marriage and moving on to a life that makes sense. What's really so amazing is that life can make sense once your marriage is over. No more mazes to run through. No more twilight zones or outer limits. No more trying to solve the unsolvable. No more fighting against the unchanging tide. When you live like this, you zap your mental and physical energy. Because spinning gold out of hay only happens in fairy tales. I'll tell you, that was very impressive to me, too. My early days, there was just so much more to say, but I think I've really said it all. And so now I'm coming to the end of my hour, and I'm going to sum up why I'm leaving the Straight Wives Talk Show, so there should be no misconceptions. Some people are thinking, well, she's leaving because people are really harassing her and making her life miserable. Well, they haven't been doing that for a while. Ever since I caught on to, they're just doing it. That's because my gay husband died. My ex-husband who was gay died. He gave me all the information on who was making my life miserable because they teamed up with him, and they fooled him into thinking that I'm the enemy. And so he gave them lots of information and misinformation according to his own perceptions. And so when he was dying, he said to me, I'm so sorry for what I did to you, and I'm asking you for forgiveness, to forgive me for working with these people. I don't even know why they're trying to destroy you, he said, but they just want to destroy your life. And he asked me to do a gift for him. He would give me the gift of the truth if I would wait until he died. He knew he was dying, and I was there to support him in his final 18 months. So he said, if you could just wait until I pass, because I don't want to have more problems. I'm a sick man. I'm dying of cancer. They may turn on me and say terrible things, and I'm just not up to it. So out of respect for him, for giving me this information, I waited on the information, but it seems like that harassment, people accusing me of being a liar and a fake and a phony because what I say is the truth, that harassment seemed to stop once they realized that I have all their information, and I am moving forward with it. I just came back from California, where I met with officials in California with all this from the cyber committee, or the cyber, you know, police out there, where there are laws against doing things to people like they did to me. So now that wouldn't cause me to retire. The truth of the matter is my business that I do for a living to earn money has expanded. I'm going to be overseeing college courses in Philadelphia. I have my high school diploma program, and I've moved to a new building and expanded my business. And it's just taking up too much of my time. So I can't do everything anymore, and this will always be where my heart is. I've been doing this for 35 years, bringing darkness into a world that needed some light, but now things have really changed, that things are more open now. It's not to say this isn't happening. It's still happening plenty. I'm still working with lots of women, but it's time now for me to move on and to go into my next venture. That's not saying that I'm going to retire from the forum altogether. I still do have my online support group, so if any of you who are listening need some help or support, I'm more than happy to hook you up with that. Also, maybe later in the summer, I'll come back to the radio and maybe a different venue of helping women in general, because after your problems with your gay marriage, you're going to have other issues that come up. So I've been toying around with Dr. Ira for us to do a show together to help women with all kinds of problems, not just this problem. All kinds of problems, so you may hear me back, and I'll certainly let all of my listeners know about that. But in the meantime, I hope you learned from my lessons that I've talked about tonight. If you would like to have any of these writings, just send me a note. I'm happy to send them out to you. I appreciate the fact that you've given me your time week in and week out. I do want to say that I've met some wonderful friends, including my nephew Scott, who I adopted, who gave me faith in humanity. He's, you know, someone who's just a wonderful guy, and some other friends along the way that I've met via this show and via my work. I'd like to thank the members of my support organization. I have some wonderful, outstanding lifetime friends through that. And for everybody for being kind to me, who was kind to me, who supported me through hell and high water. And, you know, like I say, it's hard to say goodbye to something that means so much to me for the last 35 years. But I'll still be around on the periphery, and you can always go back and listen to my old shows and listen to the many wonderful guests to give you good insight. And with that, I'd say again, love to all of you. Just try to be happy in life. You know, just look at it that you only have one life to live. Try to live it with peace and with happiness. Because as you can see on my website, life was never meant to be this complicated, period. Lessen your life load, and if you need me, you know how to find me. Bonk@AOL.com. Love to all of you, and good night. I'm out.